This episode of the UAV Digest is sponsored by GoEngineer, provider of design, engineering, and 3D printing solutions for the aerospace and unmanned vehicles industries. To learn more, visit the UAVDigest.com/GoEngineer. You're listening to episode 50 of the UAV Digest. I'm Max Flight in Hartford, Connecticut.
And I'm David Vanderhoof in Philly, Pennsylvania. How are you?
Good. Happy 50th.
Yeah, hard to believe. Well, it's not been a year yet, but we're getting awfully close. We got two extra episodes. Well, we actually have three extra episodes in there, don't we?
I keep
telling everybody that we actually have a zero episode. They're like, you have a what? I said, we have a zero episode.
The introductory show.
The let's get all the bugs out before we start advertising the show.
Right, exactly.
But yeah, it's been one heck of a year. I guess we'll celebrate in two more weeks. So our topics tonight. The first one is a future with 3D drone printers, continuously airborne UAVs, hacking drones, not drones that hack, flying a quadcopter over an airport. Stupid, don't do this at home. Flying a quadcopter over a soccer football game. Also probably not wise. One man wants to petition the FAA. And lastly, something I wouldn't expect, which is mapping mud with a hexacopter.
All right, our first item. This comes from 3dprint.com. And the title is BAE Systems Unveils Concepts of Onboard Aircraft 3D Printers Able to Print Incredible UAVs During a Mission. Well, this is fascinating. Now, the BAE Systems 25-year outlook, it includes this technology for really what amounts to on-demand UAV production from inside an airplane.
3D printing is getting an awful lot like replicators in Star Trek. So you imagine you're chugging along with an airplane and you need a specific type of mission. So you create that UAV and then drop it out of the airplane to do whatever it needs to do from the airplane. I still don't have a real handle on 3D printing. Forgive us, our sponsors. But it's clear that 3D printing and UAVs are going to go hand in hand.
Yeah, and 3D printing is actually being used more and more in the aerospace industry. The way to think about 3D printing is that it's an additive manufacturing technique as opposed to a subtractive manufacturing technique, which is what you'd expect in the past, where you start out with a piece of metal, say, or a piece of plastic or whatever the material is, and then you transform it by cutting it, drilling it, milling it, performing those kinds of machining operations on it to turn it into something else. The way 3D printing works is you start with nothing and you sort of print little blobs of material one at a time. It's almost like a digital kind of approach to manufacturing. And you bit by bit build up an object out of these little tiny blobs of, you know, whatever the material is. And this is being used in all kinds of things. You find even parts inside jet engines that are manufactured this way. So the benefit of this is that you can create something out of nothing or out of the raw material, I guess, really quickly on demand to match the specifications of what you need. So what BAE Systems is saying is that, you know what, there's a variety of missions out there, and you may not know what kind of UAV is most suited to a particular mission. So you go out there, you discover what you need, go ahead and build it, and off you go. It's kind of interesting. They have another idea too. Now, this is looking very far into the future, so keep that in mind. But it's sort of a transformer approach made up of multiple UAVs that could group themselves or ungroup themselves as they need to for the specific mission.
It's interesting because we talk about the future, but 25 years really isn't that long. And 30 years in the future, you look back at this article and go, boy, were they not thinking really out of the box. Look at what we got now. We go back to the 50s and or even the 70s in my lifetime, and you look at some of these kind of proposal articles and you go, what were they thinking? Again, it harps back to one of our themes about UAVs are allowing people to dream. It may not ever happen, but they're able to dream. And besides the two triangular delta-shaped drones with the parallelogram drone, I thought was really cool. And the video is really cool with them breaking off and then going off and doing their things and getting back together. So it's kind of like the 50s future with parasite fighters.
Yes.
For this military geek, it's kind of cool.
And I like this article because it does have, as you mentioned, David, videos that show animations depicting these concepts. So that's pretty cool. But we found another article, another kind of technology. Maybe this is a nearer term kind of a technology.
This was from the JamestownSun.com. Firm looks to create drones with unlimited flight time. Packet Digital, working with the Department of Defense in the U.S. here, to create a very long endurance UAV. First, they want to double the current endurance flight time, but eventually they want unlimited endurance by creating solar power management systems. So solar power also seems to be commingling with drones very effectively. And these would be ones that could stay aloft forever, I guess.
Packet Digital, they're out of Fargo, North Dakota. And at least one of their claims to fame is that they develop power management integrated circuits. So what they say is that the current solar cell technology is sort of at best 33% efficient. And they think that they can use some of their technology to raise the efficiency up to 40%. Also to use rising hot air to extend battery life. So in combination with these two, they hope to be able to create UAVs that can fly for an indefinite period of time. But they're not there yet. They're looking to get a grant for this, a $500,000 grant that would get them started. But there's a connection here to one of the UAS test sites, isn't there, David?
Yeah, it's. I think it's not surprising that they're located in Fargo, North Dakota, because they are going to work. They want to partner with the University, North Dakota State University, and the University of North Dakota, so they can flight test their aircraft in the Northern Plains UAS test site outside of Grand Forks. So clearly, it looks like the manufacturing industries and the people are going to start clustering around our six test sites because, hey, that's where they can fly and get access to new technologies that they wouldn't get. So watch these clusters, I guess, come together.
Hmm. And it's interesting. Yeah, I wonder to what extent newcomers to the party will have access to the facilities of the UAS test sites. And we've seen the FAA issue COAs for specific uses of these test sites. But I wonder how easily other firms or other interests will be able to come into the test sites and utilize those resources. I hope they end up being kind of open.
Well, nothing about this universe is open unless someone comes along with a sledgehammer.
I'm an idealist, I guess.
Without a shadow of doubt, you're going to see growth around those six test sites. Mm-hmm. You know, if you wanted to learn to program computers, where do you go? Silicon Valley. There's a reason why it's called Silicon Valley, because that's where it grew up and that was the center hub. In this case, we've got six hubs. And if they're successful on transmuting the information back and forth and what they're learning, it really won't matter what hub you're next to as long as you're near the hub, because you'll be able to access the benefits. And here's me thinking really optimistically that if you're next to a hub, you'll be able to reap the benefits of the other five because of the information transfers between the six.
All right. What's up next, David?
Well, civilian drones need costly fixes to avoid hacking, study indicates. This was from Christian Science Monitor. It's amazing that all of these other mainstream media come across these deep, dark articles, you know. But
it's great.
GPS navigation, of course, we've talked about, is really important to UAVs. And having flown a UAV with GPS, I wholeheartedly recommend that that's the way to fly because it flies itself. But evidently in 2012, the FAA initiated a study by GNSS, International Interface and Spoofing Study Team, to look at vulnerabilities in GPS navigation. Evidently, you can hack GPS.
And it's not too difficult.
You know, where there's a computer program, somewhere there's a hacker wanting to get into it. So this right. is just, this should not be surprising to anybody.
No, it really shouldn't. And in this title, GNSS, a GNSS receiver is a global navigation satellite system receiver. That's the term they use here. And it's basically the same thing as a GPS receiver. And this report that the FAA commissioned has not been released publicly. But the FAA gave an overview of the report at a conference, and that's what this article reports on. And they say that, quote, inexpensive and readily available GNSS repeaters and GNSS simulation tools can transmit hazardously misleading information, spoofing GNSS use. Just substitute GPS for GNSS. And the FAA described a number of scenarios, eight scenarios. Four of them were jamming scenarios and four of them signal spoofing scenarios. And they offered some suggestions to try to mitigate some of those security issues, but nothing there eliminates the threat. So it's still kind of an open issue. They did suggest a best first step or a place to begin to address this.
It's the same thing that all of us use on our day-to-day life, which is encrypt the data using the command and control link. Encryption, especially two-way encryption like this, that's pretty complicated programming.
We did find a government document. I don't think it's the document that was actually used at this conference, but it's close because it contains a lot of the same material. And it's titled FAA Navigation Programs Update. It's from September last year, 2013. And it covers a lot of different items, but in a couple of pages, it does cover the GNSS International Inference and Spoofing Study Team. And we will put a link to that PDF in the show notes. So if you're interested in kind of browsing two or three pages worth of PowerPoint material, you can learn a little bit more about what the FAA and this team is looking at.
This is a big deal for the FAA. For the drones is and UAVs is the secondary nature. Our next gen navigation system is entirely based on GPS, so we don't need airliners getting hacked. So the FAA has a bigger fish to fry with this spoofing information. So,
well, you know, David, that's a really good, that brings up a really good point. Solving this problem isn't just solving the drone problem. There's more horsepower to get this solved in the general case. The whole navigation approach in the future relies on GPS. There's got to be a lot of momentum. There's got to be a lot of motivation to address this seriously.
And you said approach, which brings us to our next story. High altitude drone flight prompts FAA warning at airport. This is from our friend Bill. Do not do this at home because it gives all of us a bad name. But a pilot flew his DJI Phantom on a video mission, not a 400 feet, 1,000 feet, but a couple of thousand feet up over the Birmingham Shuttleworth International Airport in Alabama, which set off all sorts of warnings that this UAS, not UFOs anymore, but UASs, was flying over the airport and, for all intents and purposes, shut the airport down. Not smart.
This is a dumb move. We've talked about other dumb moves by quadcopter and other pilots, but this is serious. I mean, the cardinal rule, I think, amongst them all is that you stay away from airports for obvious reasons. I guess we're going to continue to see people do these dumb things, and maybe because they're just unaware, maybe because they don't care. Who knows? We probably have all varieties. So there needs to be a policing function, and you know, as we see with model airplanes, there's an organization that does that, that you know, establishes standards, that deals with issues of training and awareness and things like that. But we need the same thing here.
Yeah, and this week also we had the incident over the 4th of July weekend where a couple of guys were flying their DJI over the George Washington Bridge in Manhattan and almost took out a NYPD helicopter. And the analogy was brought up on that incident was, think of what happened to poor Sully's airplanes when they got with a couple of geese get sucked into the engines. Imagine what a DJI Phantom could do to an engine on an airliner, let alone a helicopter. So the police dodged the Phantom and they found where the guys were flying it from, and they've been to court. They've said, we're sorry, we're never going to do it again. I'm giving up my flying quadcopters. I didn't know it was this dangerous. In this case, it sounds like they were just naive and...
Maybe not thinking.
Not thinking it. And you know what? Even having flown Parker's hexacopter, you can get sucked into the aircraft. Meaning that you're flying over the George Washington Bridge and you're flying at first person view and you can get taken away and mentally distracted by what you're looking at. It's awesome. It's a great view, and you're not focusing on the flying, you're focusing on the video. So fly first and then watch it later on your computer. But this is the kind of thing that the general public who are getting DJI Phantoms everywhere, they're taking it up. They're going, oh, this is great. Let's just go a little higher. Let's go a little higher. And the next thing you know, they're flying it into a helicopter.
Yeah.
And then we have DJI doing really something that isn't going to help any of us, which is they came up with a contest, huh, Max?
Yeah. When I saw this, boy, this made me scratch my head. The item from the DJI website is titled The Spirit of Football Video Contest. And here, football refers to what in the U.S. we would call soccer. So they have a video contest underway. And the idea, I mean, this is okay. They want to showcase the spirit of football. They want you to submit your videos, either your YouTube or Vimeo videos, that showcase the spirit of football. And they have two categories, an aerial and a non-aerial category. Aerial category. So let me get this straight, DJI. We're supposed to go out and video some football or soccer games. And how are we going to do that? We're going to fly over the field. We're going to fly around the crowd. This doesn't sound like something that we want to be advocating, does it, David?
No, I mean, yeah, there's a lot of talented pilots out there that probably could do a really good job and do this safely. But that being said, I don't want the guy that's got, oh, cool, I'll send my video. I'll go run down to the local kids' soccer field and I'll take my DJI Phantom and we'll go flying. But I've only got about 2 hours of flight experience to fly over a bunch of kids. Oh, no problem. It'll be fine. This is bad. This is unfortunately us dumbass marketers. Officially, us marketers come up with some really dumb ideas because we think it's really cool. And this is one of those ones where those other people in my profession at DJI, they needed to rethink this one a lot.
Yeah, and DJI, if somehow we missed this and we're misinterpreting what we're looking at here, please let us know. We'd both be more than happy to retract our criticism if we got this wrong, but I don't think so. There's an item coming out of Maine from the WMTW.com site. There's a guy up there, and he's mad as hell, doesn't want to take it anymore, and so he has created a petition. And he's asking the FAA to do something a little different.
Yeah, he started a petition at change.org asking the FAA to rescind your latest ruling on model first-person view flying and personal and commercial use of unmanned aerial vehicles. Edward Lyons is the CEO of FPV America. He wants to use video and fly drones. From the petition, it says, "We are a responsible group of aviation enthusiasts who regularly police our own members with regards to safety, privacy, and responsible operation of our RC aircraft. Our members range from novice to industry experts, and we meet often in person and in online forums to discuss our hobby. And we, the people, have a right to our airspace to practice and engage in our hobby. We have a right to commercial, purposeful use of this airspace as well." Now, the rules behind petition at change.org is, in order for the petition to actually be acted upon by the White House, technically, there must be 10,000 supporters. So if you agree with Edward Lyons, we'll put a link in the show notes, and you can sign the petition and go from there. And as of we're recording this, right now, there have been 5,518 supporters.
Hmm. So he's more than halfway through.
Right. 4,482 still are needed. And as of now, he's one more because I agreed with him. So it doesn't hurt, you know. Put your money where your mouth is. Take 2 minutes. Go fill out the petition. And the nice thing about change.org is if you filled it out, petition out once, you can click as many petitions as you want. So last but not least, I feel like playing Fleetwood Mac's Landslide song, huh, Max?
That would fit.
UAV mapping of mud is the best. That is really a best way to describe it, huh?
They had a big landslide in Czechoslovakia. And this was, I guess, adjacent to an area where they had some road construction or something. And this landslide, I guess it's about a 500 by 200 meter landslide. It took out the highway, it took out a whole lot of trees, it even took out some railroad tracks that were there. That's an inherently kind of a dangerous situation that they have now, because you've got all this this mud and material, and you have to get rid of it. You have to remove it, but you need to know something about what's happened and is it stable or not before you send people in there. And so this Czech company, UpVision, did some interesting things that are really going to help out with this whole problem.
Yeah, they launched a hexacopter, and they created a orthophoto map, which is basically a digital surface model using point clouds and a 3D model for visualizing the entire area. So they flew the hex, got all of the data, and then they used computers to manipulate it to come up with a 3D thing. And this was from the article. "These complex data visualizations, in addition to actual photographic images, can be used for technical applications such as vectorization to create digital maps, calculations of the landslide volume, terrain profiles, point clouds in high definition, and also the basis for geological survey." And the flight was only how long, Max?
Yeah, this was a one-hour flight. They did all this work, meaning collecting the data, in one flight over the course of 1 hour. That's amazing. I mean, think what it would have taken to do this same thing by some other means, with a helicopter or, you know, something else, and compare it to the cost of this one-hour flight. So this is brilliant stuff. This is a great example of kind of the value that UAVs can bring.
Yeah, and it was a hell of a lot cheaper to use a quadcopter than it was to actually fly a helicopter.
Yeah, for sure.
Or you can imagine the time it would take to have accomplished survey man do it. So, video of the week. Well, we don't really have a video of the week this week, but our feedback stories will talk about the, quote, best drone video I have ever seen. And I got to admit that this was pretty awesome. We had our Independence Day, 4th of July weekend, the previous weekend, and we had someone actually fly a DJI Phantom up into the fireworks.
Yeah, and we heard from a lot of our listeners. A lot of our community sent in links to this. It's been all over the news. The mainstream news has picked this up. It's really dramatic. This thing is flying through the fireworks displays. And, David, I'm watching this, and I find myself wondering, how lucky is the guy that the Phantom didn't get taken out by flak from the fireworks?
Well, yeah, and a couple of the high-definition I mean, it was filmed high def, and there are times that it kind of looks like you're in the middle of a Star Wars movie.
It does, with these
sort of rockets, sort of. It really is kind of amazing.
And I think one thing that it does is, you know, here again, it's putting that D word out into the mainstream, the drone word, in showing something that's positive and interesting in this case, and quite spectacular and beautiful. So in that regard, I think it's helping us in a good way. It's good PR.
Yeah, but then there were breaking news today. Guess who the FAA is tracking down and going to probably issue subpoenas to? As I tweeted earlier today, you liked all the fireworks videos? Well, guess what? Now the legal fireworks are about to start. As of today, we got an email from, we got a article from Forbes, Gregory McNeil, FAA investigating drone flights into fireworks.
Oh.
So the FAA is looking into multiple incidents which unmanned aircraft flew into fireworks displays to determine if there were any violation of federal regulations or airspace restrictions. Importantly, my inquiry to the agency asked about flights into fireworks and flights near fireworks display. The FAA's response seems to indicate the agency is mostly concerned with the into flights, not necessarily the near flights. The good news for those who hope to fully create stunning videos of fireworks displays. We put this stuff out there, and then the net result is...
You get caught.
You get caught. It's I don't know what else to say about it. Whether the FAA will do something or not, I don't know. It changes the dynamics for all of the excitement, and it was an awesome video. I hope the guy doesn't get sued or a subpoena or get yelled at or lose his license. Or so the next story was sent by John Leonard, and I'll let you take this one because you really like this story.
Yeah, John was watching an episode of something called Motor Week, and they were doing a road test of a 2014 Porsche 911 Turbo S, and he noticed that here and there in the video, you can see little shadows of a quadcopter as the Porsche is navigating around the course here. John says, here's an example of how this is becoming more and more mainstream. Now, here again, though, you kind of get into the aspect of, okay, is this commercial use? So that may be problematic as well, as with many of these stories. But it's a great little video. I actually had to watch it twice because I was so focused on the 911 that I kind of missed the shadows. But great car. And it's a good video. So thanks, John, for sending that in.
And the last one is from Stuart, who started off his thing, and I was a little worried about this because I was dismayed listening to episode 49 that the FAA is starting to subpoena real estate companies over the UAV usage. Luckily, he was talking about the FAA and not, I was dismayed listening to episode 49. I was like, oh, this can't be good.
I was like, okay.
So, Stuart, the next time you send us an email, put a little positive up front first so we don't panic. But yeah, he wrote us a detailed thing, and one of his comments was the FAA seems to be intentionally developing an ad hoc classification system based on commercial usefulness of the technology rather than on concerns related to the airspace. Interesting way of looking at it. They're more worried about people making money, I guess, than the safety of the airspace. What do you think, Max?
That's the point that that Stuart is making here, and I have to say I really agree with him. And that is that the FAA has drawn this line between allowable and unallowable based on commercial use or not. And the logic of that kind of escapes me. If the logic was a line drawn on the basis of safety, then that would make a lot of sense to me. But I don't really see how safety of a particular UAS mission is related to whether or not it's a, quote, commercial use or, quote, non-commercial use. I just don't get it. I don't understand that distinction. So I agree with Stuart on this, and I hopefully someday I'd love to hear from the FAA or find out exactly what led to this commercial distinction that they draw.
Well, they drew a line in the sand, and at least, well, we'll give the FAA the benefit of the doubt this one time and say at least they're sticking to what they originally came up with.
Oh, you have to give them props for consistency. That's for sure.
We definitely can admit that they are being consistent, and no means no. So I guess we'll have to follow it on. But Stuart, thank you. And we do appreciate your great show every week comment at the end of your email.
Okay. You've been listening to episode 50 of the UAV Digest. As always, you can find us at theuavdigest.com. And if you'd like to go straight to the show notes for this episode, you can visit theuavdigest.com/50.
We do have a area where you can sign up for a newsletter. Max and I are still formulating what that's going to be. But maybe if you send us an email to feedback@theuavdigest.com, maybe come up with a suggestion of maybe what would you like to see as a newsletter from us. And of course, please keep leaving fantastic feedback like you have been, and ratings on iTunes and Stitcher.com. And of course, don't forget, we're on Twitter at the UAV Digest and Facebook at facebook.com/UAV Digest. And if you really want to advertise us, you can always go buy a little bit of swag and carry it around and get a t-shirt so that people can ask you about the UAV Digest. So with that, I guess we should close out the show, Max. Until next week, I'm David in Philly.
And Max in Hartford.
Thanks for listening, everyone.
This episode has been sponsored by UAV Propulsion Tech, a provider of propulsion, servo, and rescue and recovery parachute solutions for the unmanned aerial vehicle market. For more information, check out www.uavpropulsiontech.com.